Hello, this is Pepper Anderson, the Black Woman Animator, coming back to you with another video. And in this video, I have Wayne Carnegie. Wagwan. Can you introduce yourself right quick?
My name is Wayne Carnegie. I'm happy to be on the Black Woman Animator show. My role is a senior servicing artist at Mainframe Studio right now.
Right, so kind of got an intro to where you're from by my greeting, but like, where are you from and how was it growing up?
Okay, so I'm originally from Jamaica, tiny island in the Caribbean there, you know, famous for a lot of like reggae music and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in Jamaica since, you know, like I was like I was born there, and growing up there was, you know, really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not from the city. I was born in a city, like a Spanish town, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved to the country. But we didn't have access to, like, for example, cartoons on television, right?
Yeah.
What I did have access to was comic strip from the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandmother always used to wrap China and stuff like that. I usually get the cartoon part. I usually go directly to those parts or search on the whole house just to find that. So, it was good growing up there. That's how I learned about animation and cartoons, and
mm-hmm.
started creating my own version of those. I started tracing at first. I'd bring it to school and kids were like amazed about it. You know, it looks weird, but kids were, and that encouraged me to do more and more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was okay in other subjects, but art just helped me to relax and
yeah,
a lot of trouble growing up there. Yeah.
So like, how do you end up staying with your grandmother? How was it living with your grandmother?
Well, my grandmother had a little farm. Mm-hmm. So I was like a farm boy. It was good. It was really good. And my grandmother is a natural storyteller. Mm-hmm. And as I said, we didn't have access to TV, but she used to tell a lot of stories. I used to draw characters, you know, to match those stories and stuff like that. I'm like, hey, grandma, this is the rolling calf. This is a fan scene, you know?
Mm-hmm.
She's like, good. Look horrible, but, you know, she enjoyed it, you know? So, but it was good growing up there, like helping out on the farm and all that kind of stuff. You know, like, that was basically my life from grade 1 to 9.
Mm-hmm.
In Jamaica there. I grew up with my grandmother, and that's basically what was my life, the farm life, you know, drawing, and I was also good at track and field.
Oh, nice. What,
yeah.
what event?
I was doing 100 and 200. Yeah, I was doing 100 and 200.
Oh, man, like, I only did track in high school because my basketball coach made us, and I am not fast.
Yeah.
I had to do the 1 mile and 2 mile.
Yeah, I was pretty fast. I was pretty fast until I reached high school. And that's another story. I reached high school and then I realized there's a lot of kids who are like actually faster than me. So I was
right.
Like, I better stick to this art thing. You know, so. But it was good growing up in the Clarendon country. It helped me be imaginative.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was not, it helped me with the listening ears. Like, for example, we had a radio with a makeshift antenna.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wire. Like, we have to like turn it. We're like, oh, it's 97.5. Turn it around, you know, and we finally hit a channel, and we'll listen like the daily news or, you know, talk shows and stuff like that. So, you know, that was our entertainment, and you know, a lot of in addition to that, there was a lot of community where people meet up and tell stories.
Yeah.
Campfires and, you know, we're, you know, roasting corns and stuff like that, and like just telling stories, and So it was a different stuff versus when I go back to the city in Spanish Town, Jamaica. I was exposed to Power Rangers, Dragon Ball Z, Princess Mononoke, you know, the Disney stuff.
Yeah.
And that I was like, you know, that opened up a whole new thing for me, you know, so yeah.
Yeah, I remember, you know, later in life when I was listening to Harry Potter on audiobook, I remember thinking like, oh man, I wish I had never seen the characters, because I wonder what my imagination would have done just reading the book. And so sometimes your imagination is better than the movie.
Yeah, I built up I'm saying like when I'm hearing like verbal stories and whatnot, like from audio and stuff like that, I have a weird imagination. It helps build my imagination. That's why I'm good at making up stories, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Making stories and stuff like that. So it helps, trust me, you know, it's good.
So what do you feel is unique about growing up Jamaican, maybe particularly in a rural part or whatever, but what do you feel is unique?
Culture, mm-hmm. You know, it's Jamaica is out of many one people, but there's still a culture of like African is strong. And this is mostly, I would say, people like the Rastafarian.
Mm-hmm.
I have uncles and like, you know, people who were like Rastafarians and stuff like that, who instill like an African culture and talk about Marcus Garvey and, you know, stuff like that. And yeah, it's also a Christian country too, so it's a mixture of things there in Jamaica. It's a mixture of things.
What is your favorite custom or tradition from your culture, or like what is your favorite tradition your family did growing up?
Well, I used to like when my cousin from the city come during the summer to visit.
Yeah.
You get to do all the chores that I do. I'm like, you guys are like sitting and not doing stuff. Finally, you guys get to fetch water from the well.
Yeah. And,
you know, stuff like that. Climb a tree, you know, usually they'll get fruits bought in the city. No, we have to climb and go get our foods in the country. So
right.
I remember those times mm-hmm. together. Church was good too. Church was really good. Church was basically small, you know, small community, and everybody meets up there. So those were like good events.
Yeah.
And, you know, christenings and stuff like that. I used to like, and I used to be the guy who they gave the Bible to read, and I used to like. Make like eloquent kind of thing, and I just read, you know. So,
nice.
Yeah. So yeah, that's. I always look forward to those little moments when I was growing up, and I think those moments really. I was always at the time. I was like,
yeah.
When I grow older, I'm like, those are great treasured moments. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, like being from America and hearing about, you know, some people are from the north and then they got to go down south to their cousins and like do all that stuff. You never hear the perspective of the people who live down there, like, yeah, y'all gotta come help. I only heard about the like people going down, like, oh. And then I had a best friend in high school go visit her her cousins in like Alabama for like 2 weeks and then come back with like an Alabama accent.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Be like, you was just there for 2 weeks. How you just so country?
that's how it goes with my cousin and stuff like that. And it was really good time because my grandmother again, like the food is good, you know, amazing. It's like a home cook, you know, like you get the sweet potato pudding and sorrel and various natural juices and stuff like that. None of the pop stuff or stuff like that, just like natural juice that come from our farm. So yeah, that was good times with my cousins.
So go more into your journey in like art and animation during your childhood, like up until high school.
Okay, so thank you for asking that. So, with the drawing from the comic scripts, it led me to liking art in grade nine in Jamaica. Like, art wasn't really pushed. But like on Fridays, we'll get a little bit of art, stuff like that. And I'll just draw like crazy. I'll just draw stuff, anything. I'll just look and draw and stuff like that. But my eyes were opened up when I reached high school. Mm-hmm. My high school was, for anybody, San Diego High School in Jamaica. That's a very, very famous high school mm-hmm. in Jamaica. So when I started San Diego High School, and I went into art class, I realized that I couldn't draw, really. I couldn't draw because I started meeting up on construction, gesture, composition, texture, all the element of art. And I'm like, Dragon Ball Z, I have one? Anime? The teacher is like, sorry, we don't draw anime in here. Sorry.
Right.
that was a nice Wolverine that I draw last night. You know, but then I took a step back and I got serious about art. A lot of kids weren't really interested in art, but like there was a clique, an art clique, you know, like you have history nerds, biology mm-hmm. nerds, physics nerds. Mm-hmm. I was in the art nerd group and the computer nerd, you know, somebody sneak in like a computer magazine, and then we saw Pixar behind the scenes. They're like, this is how they make the Toy Story. And I'm like, what? Toy Story just animated art and technology. I'm like, hey, I have to learn the computer. I've heard that. And these things, we used to have to sneak them in school and stuff like that. You know, a guy would be like, knock on my chair and like, wait, check this up. They're like low pass it to me. And during maths class, and they're like, hey, wait, look at this. It's the latest. It's the Final Fantasy VII. So, so with reading about that, and also one of my art teacher, when I got better at actually doing the fine art stuff, mm-hmm. art teacher, I was doing a graphics piece just by making logos, drawing logos and stuff like that. One of the teacher came over and said, his name is Mr. Collins. Mm-hmm. Rest in peace to him. He died a few years ago. And he's like, Wayne, you could do computer graphics. You could do graphics or graphic design. He just said graphics. He wasn't sure about animation. Mm-hmm. He said, I'm like, I could. He's like, I could? He's like, yeah. He's like, yeah, you could do it. Yeah. I'm like, oh, okay. All right. Okay. So I looked up the subjects that I needed to pass to get into college for art or mm-hmm. film or animation. So I just... In my final couple of years in high school, I just focused myself to just like doing my best into getting those subjects, because you have to, I don't know how it is in America, but in Jamaica, we have this thing called O levels and A levels. Mm-hmm. The O levels is like a number of subjects that you have to pass, like the maths, the English, the history. So if, like, for example, I made up my mind and I passed the amount that was required, including art. I finished with an A++ in art. I think I won the award for that year for art.
Nice.
You know, I was known as the draw artist. I remember everybody from biology is like, hey, come draw this plant for me. I'm like, what? I get to draw? Sure. And all the girls used to come by and say, hey, wait, draw the heart for me. The heart, you know? I used to be that guy to draw. So, that's how it shaped, high school really shaped myself. Like, I after that art teacher talked to me about the graphics, it really pointed me into a direction where I started to do some more research about mm-hmm. animation and position myself to get into college to go pursue it, you know? So that's how that part turned out, and that's how high school finished, and I migrated to Canada.
I feel like even though your teacher didn't really know anything, that little push is like really important. That's kind of why my platform is the way it is, because like I didn't find animation as a career to my senior year of high school. So like that little push where you have that support, like where you're like where your parents and your grandmother are supportive of your artistic
journey. My grandmother was like, because I was always a smart B student, and I was always doing work, right? Mm-hmm. So my grandmother is like, anything you want to do, really. Mm-hmm. My mom is like, as long as you're not getting in trouble, you're fine. If you want to be a soldier or a police, just do your work. It's going to come. Like, all those avenues are going to open up. If you want to be a doctor, just push yourself in those directions. So I kind of, they just gave me free rein to just like be a kid and, you know, as a young adult coming up, I was able to just get serious and position myself into my career that I want, you know, that I see myself doing. Yeah.
So before we get into your migration to Canada, like I always list projects have worked on, just in case someone out there is like, oh, I know a black person who works for Gordon.
Yeah.
You worked on Waverloo, The Nut Job.
Yes.
And feel free to correct me because sometimes IMDb is wrong, but Barbie and Her Sisters in The Great Puppy Adventure, Thomas Friends, Spartan, A Space Tale, Troll Hunters, Tales of Arcadia, True The Rainbow Kingdom, Rusty Rivets, Roger Rob, Kingdom Builders, Fancy Nancy, the SpongeBob movie, Sponge on the Run, Alien TV, and Super Giant Robot Brothers.
Yes, that's the movie that I worked on, yes. Yeah.
When you migrated to Canada, like, was like being in, was it scary or just like focused? Like, how did you choose Canada and like, what was the process for that?
Okay, so, I for example, my stepdad at the time, he was in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
He sent for the whole family to come in Canada after high school. Or in 2002, he sent for everybody. So he filed for everybody. And, you know, he's like, I have to finish school first or be in school to migrate.
Yeah. So
I end up coming also. And as soon as I landed in Canada, there was Sheridan College and there was other animation school. There's a school called Toronto Film School. They had an animation program back in 2003. And just to backtrack a bit, I didn't know to use a computer when I came here. Mm-hmm. And it was computer animation. Yeah, you know? I was like, The school gave me a course. I did a course, a 3-month course,
mm-hmm.
called Intro to the Mac.
Okay.
Right? And I finished that course, and then when I entered into an animation program, they were using PC. So I was like...
Oh. Yeah, because back then, like, Mac wasn't... They didn't even make programs for, like, Mac.
Yeah, they had one program called Apple Shake at the time. It's a compositing software. It's like, mm-hmm. way back. That's old school compositing software. But they had a Mac version for it, but then they have a PC version because it was made by Apple.
Mm-hmm.
It was made by Apple, that Shake. It was a good software. But yeah, so I got into the 3D animation program at Toronto Film School back in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I was a B student. I did my work and I went above and beyond to understand the content that the lecturers were teaching. I was an A student at all. I just, that work ethic was there.
Yeah.
Just to push through. And then after it was a good experience in the school.
Mm-hmm.
After I graduated, I didn't get a job. Didn't get a job right away. But I had a job, like a non-art job.
Mm-hmm.
And then I worked that. I worked my non-art job, and I come home, and then just be on my computer, just doing art, checking out DeviantArt at the time.
Yeah.
Checking out DeviantArt every day, see how other artists position their portfolios. And in college, they actually teach us a general to be a generalist.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so when I came out, I started narrowing down things that I was good at, you know? So I was like, there's no way I'm good at anime. I don't have the patience to be an animator at all, trust me. So I don't have the patience for that. That's, yes. But one thing I know I'm good at was painting textures.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm good. I was all right at modeling, and I was all right at lighting and compositing.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of leaned to that side, and I went after other knowledge. Digital Tutors was out back then.
Mm-hmm.
Norman DVDs were coming out. So the lessons on the web after my non-art job, the web was just getting big with like online tutorials, DVDs for training, and I just gravitate towards that. I just gravitate and learn as much as possible. And yeah, I just learn as much as possible. Yeah, I don't know if you have any more questions. So.
Yeah, like when you were talking about your grades, it's kind of funny because I graduated from high school, like 10th in my class, like what, a 3.9? Mm-hmm. But college, 2.7. It's like,
yeah,
because I didn't have this like, you know, smart people sometimes have this like existential crisis where it's like, oh my God, I was like, nope, this is hard. Like I'm on the quarter system.
Yeah.
They don't really care about my GPA in animation.
Yeah.
Excuses.
Yeah.
Yeah. There, I'm in the animation industry and I had a 2.7 graduating.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, mine was, I just passed and, you know, I had a demo reel.
Yeah.
You know, I was, my demo reel was leading towards motion graphics.
Mm-hmm.
I was okay with motion graphics because I was building all these heads-up displays,
yeah,
for like the interior of a spaceship. And I had like an alien character just like pressing up the heads-up displays, you know, all kind of like in Tony Stark's helmets.
Yeah.
Those kind of thing. I was good at that.
Mm-hmm.
And after I graduated, I didn't get a job, but I actually had interviews.
Yeah.
I just didn't get the job yet. Not yet, but I didn't give up. I didn't give up.
So how did you get involved with the music video?
Oh, so the music video, my friend from Crowdfunding, I met a guy named Adel Fortan.
Mm-hmm.
He's from Iran. And he and I became best friends because, you know, we also like soccer, football. We also like football, mm-hmm, too. So,
yeah.
So, you know, we became best friends. And I was just working my non-art job. And he's like, wait, we have to make a music video. I know this famous singer from my home country. And we could use this and we could get paid. He's famous. He's a famous guy? He's like, yeah. And then I packed up all my stuff, moved out from my apartment, and I go all the way with him in his basement to work on this music video. This music video experience was, I was a generalist.
Mm-hmm.
We were the one who were creating every single thing. The music video was the starting point for my career.
Yeah.
It turned out to be that. So it was a collaborative project. And so I'm just saying to students out there who came out of school and your demo reel is not up to the par yet, don't be scared. Sometimes you need to do a collaborative project.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're probably not going to be paid or whatnot, but yeah, like for example, we finished the music video in 6 months. We got paid $3,000 Canadian. Yeah, so we split it between three of us, and you know. But when we're done, once we're finished the music video, we had so much content for our demo reels, new demo reels.
Mm-hmm.
and we have new titles.
Right.
You know, because we just did so many things. So my friend, he got a job. He got a job and moved away in the industry. I got a teaching assistant job at the school that I was working through with my demo reel.
Mm-hmm.
New demo reel. And the school that I attend, Toronto Film School, I had a teaching assistant job there. So I went back there.
Nice.
I created some more content because my demo reel was a music video, and then I created a little short film.
Mm-hmm. So
had that resource for me to add more stuff to my reel.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. So fast forward to around like 2007, 2008,
mm-hmm.
I was no longer working at the school, but I'd made so much networking.
Yeah.
Work. I made so much link because the school hire industry professional. And I'm like, you don't know if this place is hiring? They're like, well, you just send me a demo reel and I'll pass it on. And they did. At one point, I almost worked on one of the underworld
movies.
Almost. Yeah. But maybe I was too expensive. because another thing, you know, when you graduate and they ask you what's your salary expectation? I think I failed there because I was a junior and I'm like, 50K? No, sorry.
That's why I try to, like, when I'm interviewing at places, I try to ask for the salary range. And sometimes they'll come back like, oh, but what do you want? I'm like, no, I feel more comfortable with the salary range. Because either you'll say too high or it'll be lower
than
you're used to, but you're willing to accept it.
Yeah.
Depending on your situation. So I like to ask companies for the salary range and just like, if they try to get me to respond, I'm like, nope, salary range, please.
Yeah, I usually do that. Now that I gain more experience, I'm like, you know what? You know, what do you guys pay for artists with my experience?
Right.
I'd love to see what you guys have and we could talk over this.
Mm-hmm.
I remember asking, speaking of salary explanation, right? I remember acting very low at one point. I just marked, okay, that what I think I work, but the company gave me more. So I was like, wow, okay. You know, so that was one scenario. So anyway, so after like 2007, I networked with the teachers that were industry professionals.
Mm-hmm.
And they passed on my reel to a studio, and the studio called me in Toronto 2009 for the first animated series called Weebaloo.
Mm-hmm.
And I got in as a modeling, texturing, and rigging artist. And the interview was really cool. The guy's like, Wayne, sorry, we can only pay you $800 a week. I'm like, $800 a week? I was getting paid like $200 a week. Bring it on. I'm like, when do I start? He's like, January 5th. I'm like, man, okay. All right. You know, so that's how my career started.
Yeah.
That's how, like, my career, well, this music video, but then the actual industry job, that was it.
So something that I say is, like, all animation is tedious. It's just, like, which tediousness do you like? So you were trained as a generalist. You started as a generalist. But, like, how did you get into the specialty of surfacing?
Okay, so, well, you know, as I said, I love painting textures.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned over time. For example, my next job after Weebaloo, I learned more about materials,
mm-hmm.
material properties, working with studios. Like, for example, at Toonbox Entertainment, when I was working on that job, that was my first feature film.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working with a renderer called 3D Light. It's a renderman similar to RenderMan.
Mm-hmm.
And they, the leads taught me about shaders because it wasn't just about painting.
Right.
It's not like a hand-painted video games. It wasn't like that. I thought it was that, the teacher painting, but it wasn't. It was about shader. What does metal look like? What does glass look like? What does a frosted glass look like? What does a rust metal look like? What does cloth look like? you know, like with the little sheen on it and all that kind of stuff with Arnold. Yeah. So all those material, I learned about material properties, and that's how it, you know, I fell in love with it. You know, and I'm still learning, but because like every student that I've been since, it's a different setup, meaning they might be using Redshift, they might be using RenderMan, they might be using Arnold, they might be using Unreal Engine.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, so yeah, that's how it was, yeah.
For the people watching that aren't familiar, can you kind of explain what a surfacing artist does?
Surfacing artist is responsible. Surfacing artist is an artist. It is similar, like in the States, I think in the States you guys call it look development.
Mm-hmm.
Not visual development, look development. I think I saw something from Disney, like mm-hmm. a Disney website, did that. Okay, we're looking for a look development artist, but really, we call it surfacing in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So you're responsible for creating the shaders and the texture. Mm-hmm. So in VFX, visual effects, you have the texture artist. So texture artist sometimes does not play around with it does not play around with the shader qualities.
Mm-hmm.
You just create the texture, and then another guy, look development artist, working on this. But in the surface artist case, he does both of them.
Okay.
He does the shader work for characters, environments, props, vehicles, and so forth. So yeah, that's the surfacing artist. Yeah.
Yeah. So when I go talk to kids, I tell them, like, you know, when I explain the different levels, I say, like, when you model a object, it's all gray. And so I call texturing and surfacing like making it look pretty. And so, and like, you know, like Wayne said, you're making it look like wood, you're making it look like plastic, you're making it look like metal. So all those properties have to be done by a person. So I always call it making it look pretty.
Yeah, that's it. That's basically it. That's well said. Yeah.
Let's see. What do you consider your biggest breakthrough in your career? Or if you've had multiple breakthroughs?
My biggest breakthrough was working on the Nut Job, the feature film. Feature film was my biggest breakthrough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was what was my biggest. You know, I went home to Jamaica to see it. Mm-hmm. I flew home to Jamaica to see it in a Jamaican theater.
Nice.
I was dating at the time. So mm-hmm. I brought my lady with me, and you know, she was from Jamaica too, and like we stand there and the National Anthem of Jamaica plays. And I shed a tear, man. I was like bawling. I was crying out my eyes. and I felt very proud. That was a big moment for me. Big moment for me. And all my family were happy and my friends were happy. And, you know, because they knew I was working on stuff, but they finally saw that, you know. And, you know, and then after that, I went on to this speaking to students who were in Animation Jamaica because around the 2014, animation had a big push in Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
Kingstoons.
Yeah.
And the school started, and also there's a group on Facebook called Jan.
Mm-hmm.
That is a Jamaican animation group. That I joined, and I reached out to students, and they recognized me. They're like, "Hey, that's the guy that worked on the Nut Job." I'm like, "Oh, okay, cool, thank you." All right, but you know, I sort of made myself available to. After that breakthrough, I sort of made myself available to up and coming artists.
Yeah.
Because I'm not really a stuck up guy or like, I'm not like that. Like, I believe it. I think I watched something online where they're like, pass it on or something like that. Pass on the knowledge. You know, I believe in that, especially in our community. I believe in passing on knowledge. If I could out of 10, if I could encourage or help 5 people out of 10, like especially people of color, anybody really, but especially people of color, because there are not a lot of us in the industry. Well, we're growing though.
Yeah.
We're coming up, you know, but, you know, just to encourage others who might not think that there is a career, I made it my point of duty to encourage and mentor people, you know, from my community. And doesn't have to be Jamaican, could be American, Canadian kids, you know, I'm just that kind of person. I became that kind of person because after Nut Job, I became that kind of person, like really reaching back and giving back knowledge. Yeah.
Yeah. The point of me so many people is like, we are few, but there are more than we realize.
Yeah, that's true. It's a lot of us, man. I thought we were like, I'm like, that's a black guy over there. He started today. I'm like, hey, you know. And I had a really interesting story to tell. On the Nut Job, there was a black guy. I don't know if he wanted me to say his name. His name is Leon Gittins or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
He's an animator. So anyway, I saw the guy. He's from England, but he came over to America to work in animation and play basketball, I think. And anyway, he came to Canada to work on another job for a little bit. I was there. I'm like, Leon, but I never said anything to the guy. Anyways, in this family group on Facebook, my family, he posts something. I'm like, who's this guy posting in my family group? It turns out we're related. I'm like, cousin. I'm like, oh my God. But, you know, yeah, we're cousins. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, you know, so I'm like, who's this black guy animating this character? I'm like, okay, there's another black guy here.
Trader.
Yeah, you know, and it turns out in that family group that me and him were dating, and I think he works on Spider-Man the game. He was working at Insomniac, and yeah, that was like a wow moment for me. So
yeah,
I wasn't the only one in that family that loves animation and art.
Nice. So how did you get into doing children's books?
Oh, children's books. Now, in 2016, my daughter, Olivia, was born.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to do digital painting on the side, very highly rendered digital paintings. And then I changed my style. Because I changed it to a more simple style. It's not easy. Especially when you're doing like 32 pages per book, right? Oh my God, enjoying like and painting like crazy.
I've done children's books in the past and I'm like, I'm out.
Yeah. First of all, you have to plan. Do your thumbnail sketches, line them up. Mm-hmm. If they're not working, you're gonna have to eliminate a few. And then once you're happy, especially I'm working in animation full time, plus
right.
This is just like a side project, but I still need to get it out. Right? I wrote a story for myself,
mm-hmm.
but then one of my classmates from St. Jago High School from Jamaica, she's here in Canada too. She reached out and she gave me her book, and she gave me a manuscript in 2016. And I just started I'm like halfway done illustrating it. Mm-hmm. It's called Dead Run Among the Tree. Mm-hmm. I'm like three quarter way done with illustrating it. And she's giving me her book so long. And that's how I venture into the children's book thing. And also in addition to that, my daughter, for example, I thought that these are some of the stories that I love my daughter. There's so many stories I have that I love my daughter to know and read, and read about it. And you know, kudos to like the creators of colors, because I saw Hear Love.
Yeah.
And then I love this Karma. There's a show called Karma on Netflix. It's like shows like that. I see them coming out, and I think it's a good thing. I never used to see characters that look like me in books or video games or, you know, animated movies and stuff like that. So it's good that we're actually making a change and going into a direction where we can include all kids of color and different backgrounds, you know, nationalities and whatnot. So, yeah, you know, that's how I got into the children's book thing. Yeah.
Something I forgot I want to ask you, like, what are some of your favorite stories that your grandmother told you?
Oh, Anansi stories. Mm-hmm. Anansi and about the rolling calf. Mm-hmm. It's like a bull. I don't know. I think she said the bull. It's like a guy, a bull with a human body, but he has like a bull head, and yeah, he breathes fire, right? Mm-hmm. And then the only way you have to get rid of him is to, like, you have to run to a crossroad or something like that. Mm-hmm. Because the cross, you know, like all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So like those stories from her. My grandmother is always making up some duppy stories about her and how, you know, how she ran away from a duppy. And, you know, I'm like, Grandma, you were there? Sure. You're sure it was duppy? You know, we call them duppies in Jamaica. Duppies, duppy stories. Yeah. So, but yeah, she find her way how to entertain me without the television and stuff like that. She had her ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you like about teaching?
Sorry?
What do you like about teaching?
Okay, so teaching, again, this is another goal of mine where I want to reach back and educate as much people as possible from my community, my country. So I took on a job as an animation lecturer at Edmonton College. That's one of the top art schools in the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. And I just teach a few hours, you know, teach a few hours, just put in a few hours, you know. Yeah. I'm pretty sure if like a school in America would call me up and say, hey, Wayne, can you do a little speech about, you know, show us a little demo? I have, you know, as long as I could like noodle it in my schedule, I will do it. I'll do it. So I really like teaching a lot, the giving back, sharing knowledge kind of thing. And also, I don't think I know everything. So if, you know, by experimenting and showing students stuff, if students, you know, a lot of these students nowadays, they are smart. Mm-hmm. They can point out a few things and I'm like, hey, sir, why didn't you do it that way? I'm like, really? I was testing you and you passed, man. Okay, I'll do it this way. You know, so, yeah, I like that about teaching, you know, and that's why I venture into that area. Mm-hmm. Just a little few hours a week, that's good. Right now we're gonna be back, I think, for September, but right now there's no teaching for me until but I love it. Yeah.
What have you learned throughout your life and career that would be beneficial advice to others?
Always just stay busy. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you're gonna have to miss those parties that your friends are keeping. Some of these animation craft and the art craft, it takes time to develop. You know, you're not gonna get it the first time. Always keep trying. Mm-hmm. You're not gonna get it the first time. Always keep trying. Just be passionate about it. You know, pick areas that you're good at and go after that areas.
Yeah.
Work, collaborate with people, like-minded people, like for people, just collaborate, see how that works. Yeah, those are my advice. Yeah, keep going. Yeah.
With having to jump from project to project in your career, what have you learned about being able to find that next job?
Oh yeah, I'm gonna be honest, in the beginning of my career, it gave me a lot of anxiety because it's like, oh my God, my contract is running out. My contract is running out. I got a year contract here. My contract is running out. I have to look for another job. That was a big anxiety, and it pays good. Trust me, it pays good, but then you don't know the next 3 months. For example, if you're out of a job for 3 months, you might blow through that money already, right? So those are all those anxiety and stuff like that. But lately, since the pandemic, I see Suda's been pumping out contents. And for example, in America and Canada, there's always studios looking for artists. I think they're shorter artists right now. They're very short. I think that they're short because, like, for my job, they're like every time you see a service information goes up, rigging, animation, modeling, they're looking for everybody. So, for example, I'm able to, especially the working from home, like, I also, in addition to, I have anxiety, you know, I have like a social anxiety thing. Mm-hmm. The work from home kind of helped me better.
Yeah.
So, and then I'm able to juggle multiple projects, like I'm doing the book, plus I'm doing my job, plus I'm doing the teaching, all from my desk in my house here.
Yeah.
I just get up in the morning, refresh myself, grab tea, and turn on some music a little bit, and then I start to work.
Yeah.
You know,
So with living in Canada, you gave us some insight into like how you got there. But have you had the same visa the entire time you've been in Canada, or what has been your journey, that process for like visa and stuff?
Oh, so coming to Canada, I came here as a landed immigrant because my stepdad was a citizen and he filed for us. Mm-hmm. So I came as a landed right away immigrant, right? So we're meaning I could go to school. I wasn't just a citizen though. I was a citizen of Canada. But I came in as a landed immigrant. So I don't know what's the equivalent to that in the United States. Is that when you get your green card or something? I don't know.
Possibly.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was a card. It was just a card. You get a card and I could get jobs right away. I could get jobs that Canadians get in. I could go to school. I wasn't categorized as an international student. Mm-hmm. I get the normal thing. So.
Okay.
And then after that, then a few years later, I did my citizenship.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Became a Canadian citizen. How hard or easy is it to become a Canadian citizen?
Oh, it's not hard. Just Canada is a country that it's a very welcoming country. And, you know, as long as you be humble and work hard, it's stuff is there for you to excel.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't that hard at all to become citizen once you just stay on the good part, stay out of trouble.
Yeah.
You know, to stay on your purpose and whatnot. And then, yeah, things just happen. Good things happen, you know?
Mm-hmm. Has being Black or a foreigner impacted your career in any way in a predominantly white industry?
When I got in industry,
mm-hmm.
for example, there wasn't a lot of Black people in the industry for me, like, at the time. So the people who helped me are white people, like my friends. Those just white people helping me out and linking me up with. And in terms of racism, I don't know if I saw it directly. Maybe indirectly, maybe in like not giving me a raise or not renewing my contract.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how the behind the scenes stuff, but directly thrown at me, I've never experienced anything like that.
Okay.
I know one of my Caucasian friends who are always sending me job, like for example, this guy, he always like messaged me and say, I have a friend from India, for example.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, wait, are you working? Where are you now? Are you looking for anything? I'm like, sorry, I'm good. I have work up to my eyeballs now. Sorry, thank you though. You know, so these people, are usually like my mentor and stuff like that. And, you know, animation, in the animation industry, I think you have to just prepare to be, live a rock star life. You're going to be on the road. Now, with a lot of remote work opening up, it's okay. It's a new thing. It's a new way of working. But before, it was kind of like, hey, just prepare to be on the road. You might be in Vancouver, you might be in Montreal, you might be in Toronto. So you might be in the U.S. Maybe you get a job at DreamWorks or something like that, you know? So,
yeah.
So, but yeah, like it's I haven't experienced any kind of racism directly, like a direct, like, hey, get out, you're black. And I've never experienced anything like that, not in Canada anymore.
What do you feel the importance of what are your thoughts on getting more content with Caribbean characters in TV and movies?
It's a very good question. This is where my side projects comes in play, because they're all Caribbean characters. You know, especially I have stuff with Anansi in it and how we tell Anansi's story. You know, Anansi's story is an African story. It's a West African story. But like Jamaican have their own version and stuff like that. And everybody have their own Anansi story.
Right.
So, you know, in my spare time, I've developed characters, simple character, like a character on a farm, for example. Like I grew up, all my character and content side projects are related to how I grew up, because it's kind of like I'm doing this master illustration course right now I'm doing this project where they ask, it's called a creative eye. So they're asking to tell about yourself and whatnot. So basically, you know, all my artwork is for my daughter, really.
Yeah.
It's like a map. It's a map. It's like, hey, daddy used to do this. When he was growing up, daddy used to do that. And so forth. So it's like a pathway for her to she lived with her. So she lived majority of the time with her mom. So she does visit me. So whenever she comes around me, or I'll just mail her stuff in the mail and say, hey, check this drawing out. Write a little note.
Yeah.
So it's mainly to educate her about her dad. So that's how I use my art nowadays. And it's mostly Caribbean characters and backgrounds.
What have you decided is your purpose in regarding to representing Jamaican or Caribbean people in animation?
Purpose? Just keep being me, you know? Keep being me and reach out. As I said, reach back and help. That's a big thing for me. Help the youths. You know, and like how I'm in Canada right now, it's not only limited to Jamaica. You know, it's just youths, you know, people of color, mainly for people of color, because I don't know, like, you know, sometimes like a lot of youths just need direction from our communities, you know, and I want to be that person.
Yeah.
Hey, you're good at art? Not even just art. You can dance. You can make craft. You can crochet. You know, I have a cousin right now. She does crochet. And I'm her biggest fan. Stuff like that. So I just like help people find their niche, and just like be great at it. I just want to point people and just say, hey, you know what? It's gonna take time.
Yeah.
It's gonna take time, but like, I want to be that impact, and I want to be that person. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
What would you say is like biggest dream of like being able to reach back to Jamaica? Like, what, if you had any thoughts of like, I wish I could do this one?
Biggest dream is like getting this first book out. It's a Jamaican book, getting the first book out. And biggest top dream is to actually create an animated series or animated short film about Jamaica, and hopefully, like, for example, Hear Love got picked up by Netflix. Netflix, right? One of them got picked up by Netflix.
Now it's creating Young Love.
Young Something. I have a lot on my mind. Yeah. So one of these series get picked up by Netflix or whatnot. So I just have the hopes. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there's a lot of streaming platform now. You have like Apple TV. You know, they're pumping out content, animated content. Mm-hmm. So I want to have that content created, Caribbean content created. That's my biggest. That's the next step, actually, for me. That's the next step. Yeah, that's my next step. Just create it and just sell it. Sell it. Yeah. Yeah. One of my biggest inspiration to go to that level is the guy that created Lucas the Spider. His story is a big, I'm like, oh man, that's remind me of myself, you know. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's a big inspiration for me. Yeah, to go to the next step.
Mm-hmm. What do you hope you can create doing in this current landscape that you wish you could have done? So like there's computers, there's access to YouTube, the internet and all this. What do you hope Jamaican creatives are doing that you wish you could have done back then?
I wish, well, sorry, repeat the question.
What do you hope Jamaican creatives are doing in this current landscape of access that you wish you could have done if you had it?
Platforms like yours, we didn't have it. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't see people of like us that work in the industry that we want to go in. Mm-hmm. But I would have wished I had something back then. Remember, it took a teacher to say, hey, you can do graphics. What is graphics? You can do graphics, man. You know, it took a teacher like that. But with platforms like yours, mm-hmm. and Color of Motion, for example, mm-hmm. It kind of does say, yeah, you're welcome too. You're welcome. You can do it.
Yeah.
Do it, you know, so I wish those platforms were around back then. So
my last question, if someone was producing a documentary about you, what things would you want them to highlight about your life outside of your work in animation?
Who I grew up in Jamaica, in the country. Yeah, with donkeys and goats and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, mm-hmm. Going to the market, you know, go to the farmer's market and stuff like that, and, you know, bring in produce to the market to get sold. My whole life story, growing up in Clarendon, is a big part of me. I would love to get that documented.
Yeah.
You know, I'm doing my own little thing with a side project that I'm doing for my daughter. Yeah. It's kind of like a documenting things to show her. And surprisingly, that same community, her mom is also from that community that I grew up. So,
okay.
You know, it's a little bit for her to, you know, say, hey, you know, my dad is from here. My mom is from here. Mm-hmm. You know, just a little roadmap for her, you know.
So where can people follow you if they want to see your art?
Okay, so right now I have, I'm on Instagram at Drawtis, Drawtis018.
Mm-hmm.
And I post little bits and pieces on there. In terms of like blog and stuff, I have a Tumblr account.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see if I could paste it in the chat.
I already got it.
Oh, you got it?
What it is.
Yeah.
Just tell people what it is. I'll have it in the description. So.
Yeah. So, yeah, you can find me on Tumblr.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm on Facebook. Anybody can reach out to me on Facebook and stuff like that. I'm not really taking commissions right now. I'm so busy with work and trying to finish the book. So.
Don't you have a Facebook group too? Or?
Sorry?
Don't you have a Facebook group?
I have a Facebook group called Drawtis.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Hardly post anything in there lately because I'm just like super busy.
Mm-hmm.
But you can anybody can reach out to me on Facebook, Instagram, anytime. You know, I'm even up. I'm one of those guys who are up like 12 o'clock in the night, 1 o'clock, mm-hmm. you know, doing art. So if I see a message coming in and I'm awake, I'll respond to you. If you have any question, You know, I don't feel like I'm above anybody to not respond and whatnot. So
yeah,
I'll just message. I'll just talk to you, you know. A lot of times young artists message me and say, hey, Wayne, what do you think of this character? I'm like, it's good, man. Maybe tweak this and, you know, a little bit. That's my opinion anyways.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, yeah, they can reach me, reach me anywhere on Instagram, Facebook, and shoot me a message anytime. Yeah.
And thank you, Wayne, for allowing me to highlight you. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Deborah. Thanks for your platform to hope I'm able to inspire somebody out there, you know, take a step and use their art and their art to, you know, inspire the world and get in the industry. There's plenty of space. You just gotta really, you know, stick out your toe and go after your dreams, you know. Thank you for having me.
And to everyone out there, I want you to like, so I know it's real. Comment and tell me how you feel. Subscribe to Citadel and sign up for post notifications to show your zeal. And I see you in the next video. Bless. Peace.